So welcome to Day to Day, our continuing exploration into what satellites can tell us about the Earth's environment. Today, I am joined by Dr. Hayley Evers-King, our ocean and marine expert and guide. Hi there, Hayley.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah, not bad, not bad. Shame I'm not recording with you in person, but hello from just up the road in Darmstadt.
It's nice to hear you again. I think we have not been in the same place for more than 120 days by now.
It's been a very long time.
It has been a long time. But we have still done a lot of stuff together. Later on, we're going to be talking about fisheries. But what are some of the highlights of the activities you've been involved in over the last few weeks?
So the last few weeks have actually been very, very busy with lots of different training events for me. This is typically sort of in the run up to summer, quite a busy time of year. You know, we have a lot of courses that we ramp up to from the new year, then into sort of April, May, June, everything, you know, becomes quite busy. And of course, we've had a big change this year with the pandemic, meaning that we can't hold many of our courses in person. So we've moved to doing a lot of things online, which comes with its challenges, but also a lot of really good opportunities for us to, you know, reach more people all around the world.
So who have you been training and what are you training them at the moment?
So mostly in how to access and work with the marine data that we make available through the Copernicus program. So at the moment, this is primarily Sentinel-3 data, also some of the JSON data from those contributing missions as well. In the future, that will also involve Sentinel-6. So that's kind of the main part of what we do from the UMETSAT perspective. But we've actually been working with a number of partners, particularly in the last couple of months, to kind of situate what we do in a wider context for different training courses. So we've had a Train the Trainers event where we've worked with the Copernicus Marine Service so we can work with people who have teaching or training responsibilities to help them train other people to use this data in various different settings, at universities, you know, as part of marine organizations that have government mandates, etc. And we've also been working with our partners on the Wekio Diaz system. So this is one of these hosted processing, like cloud computing, if you like, type environments. You hear them referred to in various ways. This is one of the Copernicus ones. And this is a system that's basically designed to help users to access the really broad range of satellite data that they may need for different applications all through one central point, but also to access some of the computing resources they may want to use. The data we work with now is very diverse and very, very large. So, you know, working with all of it on one laptop is pretty much impossible. So we're trying to open up these kind of opportunities to help people use the wide variety of data fully. And Wekio is one of those things. So we had a training event for that last week, which we also had to do online. So that's ongoing at the moment. I'm helping people working with Jupyter Notebooks and such like. And yeah, it's really fun, even though it comes with its challenges since we can't actually see people at the moment.
What's one of your highlights? So you said, you know, obviously there's downsides to working the online environment, but there's upsides too. What's been one of the upsides for you in teaching online?
I think it offers a lot of flexibility. Which is really good. I mean, at the moment, everybody's under a lot of pressure, admittedly. And this is not a, you know, I think an online course in a normal year is very different from an online course during a pandemic. You know, I think most of the time people would not be, in this case, you know, having to deal with emergencies in their family lives, take care of childcare, et cetera, which puts additional pressures on. But in general, the online environment offers us a lot of flexibility to make material available to people in different places. You know, if they can't physically attend a place for, you know, money or travel or whatever reasons that may mean they can't, online makes access so much more equitable in that sense.
Yeah.
And I think it allows more personalized learning. You know, I think some people really like a one-on-one like chat via Zoom. So, and some people similarly like, you know, classroom environments where they're learning in a very interactive way. And a lot of other people, you know, quite like just to watch a video, go away and try something themselves and then maybe come back when they have a specific question.
Yeah.
And I think online structures of courses, etc., have a really nice potential for allowing people to choose the learning approaches that suit them best. And I think we've seen that in the courses that we've been doing so far, that people seem to appreciate that.
Yeah, I had a chance to look at some of the feedback. I think I see the same thing, and I'm quite excited by that, to see feedback from people. And I do get a sense from it that people are saying, yeah, you know, this was actually easier to attend at this time, because I could balance the ways that I wanted to engage with the course, the time I could engage with the course, the times I couldn't engage with the course because I was having to look after family or whatever. And I think that's been really super cool.
Yeah, so I think we'll definitely do more of a mix going forward. I think that will help us to reach more people, which is, you know, part of the job, I think, a really important part of it.
So our topic for today is fisheries, and we're going to be talking to Kwame Adekam later on, who's from the University of Ghana, who we've worked with in the past. And I guess just to start with, when I say the word fisheries, what am I actually talking about? When I say, you know, fisheries, and from what's the connection from fisheries to what we do at UMetSat with the Copernicus data that we look after?
I mean, I think so. Fisheries are it's a very, very broad industry, you know, from the individual person going out with their rod and fishing as a hobby through to, you know, small scale artisanal, if you like, fishermen who work in small villages, all the way through to, you know, your giant ocean trawlers that supply, you know, our big kind of food industries. It's a very diverse industry in itself, but it's probably one of the clearest ways that we, being, you know, land-based creatures for the most part, are connected to the ocean. You know, we eat fish, a lot of us, you know, or a lot of us work in the fishing industry. Fisheries are an absolutely vast source of protein globally and a really essential part of many economies all the way throughout the world. So they're very, very important in terms of our, as society's, interaction with the oceans. And as with all kind of resources that we are using in the natural world at the moment, you know, they can be under pressure by our activities, which, you know, poses problems for us as well as for those environments themselves if we want to, you know, maintain them both for our activities and for the sake of themselves. So with fisheries, there's a lot of questions about how we manage them sustainably for the future. So, you know, we can keep getting that great protein source, we can keep those jobs without, you know, destroying that resource. It's a common problem across all natural resource management issues, I think. But for the ocean, fisheries is probably one of the biggest ones.
Now, of course, our role, we look after the Sentinel-3 satellites. And what's the connection then between the Earth observing and satellites and fish?
Yeah, it sounds like a bit of a long reach, doesn't it? From a fish in the sea, you know, hundreds of meters down all the way up to these, you know, satellites up in space taking measurements. But fisheries themselves are very much influenced by the ocean ecosystem as a whole. And that is really what we're observing when it comes to using space-based data from satellites. We can't really see individual fish. We don't have satellite resolution that would really pick that up, especially not given that they move constantly and all these sort of things. So we're not actually using satellites to kind of identify individual fish or even schools of fish. You know, they're not like the plankton that are spread so ubiquitously throughout the ocean that they actively change the color regularly. Mm. So they're not, it's not really a direct measurement approach, but the natural environment really strongly influences fisheries. You know, so plankton, as I've just mentioned, are fundamentally the base of most of the food web in the oceans. So they're a source of food ultimately for everything else really that grows, including fish. So that's a good thing. You know, we need plankton, fish need plankton to eat and grow so we can harvest them, etc. But they can also, this can also be a bad thing. Fisheries can be affected by algal blooms, etc. If there's toxins associated with them, or if it affects the oxygen in the water, these kind of things. So we can monitor that biological part of the natural environment using our satellite data.
So how do we
do
that?
We can also measure.
How do we do that?
We use ocean color mostly, which is my kind of favorite of the data streams, if you like, because it's the one that I kind of come from as a researcher in my background. We use ocean color data to infer how much plankton is around, maybe what type of plankton is there. We can also look at whether there's any potential links between types of sediment and outflows of rivers that might provide certain nutrients or cause issues with certain biotoxins, things like that. So we use ocean color as a tracer of general water quality from a more biological perspective.
So this is looking at the ebb and the flow on the ocean surface and the food environment that is there for the fish.
Yeah. But we also can look at the physical ocean environment. And that's, you know, that's really important for fish as well. I mean, like us, they like to live in different places. You know, they have different temperature tolerances. They like more or less turbulent environments. You know, some of us like prefer to live by the sea. Some of us prefer to live near mountains. You know, some of us prefer sunny weather, cooler weather. Fish are just the same. You know, they have places that they've evolved and adapted to live in. So we can also measure that part. So we can look at ocean currents using altimetry. Mm-hmm. We can also look at sea surface temperature using also optical instruments, but ones that look more at a different part of the wavelength spectra to get information about temperature. And that's important for understanding, like I say, where fisheries are or fish themselves like to live. What are the sorts of environments we might find them in? What environments do we maybe need to protect for where they spawn or things like that? But this is also a maritime safety issue as well. So, you know, the physical ocean environment is, if you're going out on a fishing boat, it's really useful for you to be able to know if it's going to be super windy and really, you know, there's going to be dangerous waves, etc. So there's also a maritime safety issue that satellites play a role in here when it comes to fisheries activities. So basically, satellites monitor the natural environment, and we can use that to support fisheries management and activities.
So on the one side, I've heard the phrase sort of the biogeophysics, which puts together a whole bunch of ideas, but the idea of the biology, the plankton health, and therefore the fish health, relates to the flow, the circulation in the ocean. And we've talked in the past with Aida Azkarate about swirls and the sort of how we're taking stuff from low down in the ocean, bringing it up and moving food around, as well as the temperature environment. And I really like that you mentioned the maritime safety. That gets back to my world, of course, the meteorological environment, so issuing warnings. But if I look in some parts of the world, the boats that people are using are not that big and are very susceptible to high wind or wind in certain directions or extreme waves, and that's an important part of the services that fishing people get, I think, from our world.
Yeah, it's really where the sort of oceanography meets with the meteorology, I think, in you know, our sort of crossover. You know, what happens on land, what happens on ocean, in some senses, in these cases, is very, very similar. Yeah. And can be used in, you know, certain ways to protect, you know, life and economy, which is a really, really vital part of the puzzle. There's also one more part about fisheries, which I think is quite interesting. And when we talk to Kwame later, he'll definitely say more about this, is whilst we can't really see fish individually or in schools per se from space, we can observe fishing activities to a degree.
Yeah.
And the same with, as well, so closely related to all these things we talk about with fisheries are also aquaculture. So aquaculture being like the equivalent of like farming, I guess, for fish or for fisheries, compared to hunting per se, then we can actually see these activities to a degree. I mean, for aquaculture farms, it's actually quite easy to visualize them from space because we know usually roughly where they are. They're near the coasts. They're usually quite substantial. So you can actually pick up kind of the number of, they're big enough to see, depending on the satellite you're using, of course, but
yeah.
And the same things apply to them in terms of, you know, how important the natural environment is, but also the impacts that they can have on the environment, which, you know, they need to monitor themselves for compliance with legislation and things like that. So we can see those activities. We can also pick up fishing boats, depending on how big they are. Again, they tend to be very bright, so certain satellite data can pick them up really clearly, so we can get an idea of who's fishing where and what's going on. And that's super, super important for management, but also for compliance and ensuring that we don't have illegal activities going on. And for a lot of countries, protection of their natural resources is really, really important. So illegal fishing is something that they worry about a huge amount. Of course, the oceans are big and we only have limited resources to monitor them. But satellites have this benefit of being able to see large portions of the ocean at the same time, you know, much more than we could see from taking a patrol boat out. So combinations of different satellite data can also help to get a handle on what's going on in terms of fisheries activities, both legitimate and illegitimate, as well.
Yeah, and for me, that gets onto something which I find quite exciting about Kwame's work. So we do tons of stuff to make sure the quality of the data that we provide is really good, as does everybody else. But it's people like Kwame and the work he's doing within that project. He's able to bring it all together and make it meaningful and useful.
Yeah. And
so it really makes everything sing. Yeah. Sorry, go on.
Yeah. He's got, and him and other people who work in this kind of these interface environments between kind of the sort of marine industries, if you like, or marine stakeholders and the satellite data are hugely vital. Because, you know, we know what to do to make a satellite that works well. We don't always know what it is that a person needs to make the decisions to run their business day to day. And we have to meet in the middle when we're planning applications like this or trying to, you know, solve problems or, you know, bring the data to real benefit for people. So the work that people like Kwame are doing, going and speaking to these downstream users, the stakeholders, the fishermen, the fisheries managers, and saying, you know, what actually would help you? What questions do you have that we need to answer? And we can then, as you know, between us, you know, sort of in the agencies who operate the satellites, design the products, etc., and expert scientists in between, can hopefully, you know, create an end-to-end process that says, okay, we can take this core thing we can measure scientifically down to maybe an indicator that's actually useful for an action to, you know, say whether people should or shouldn't go fishing in a certain area, whether it's safe or not. And that's, you know, that's really where the value starts coming out of this data into day-to-day lives.
Yeah, so it's all the swirls that we were talking about with Ada last time we met, all the research you've done in the past. This is what turns it into a local government being able to decide and make decisions that then turn into people have food.
Exactly.
Our fisheries are protected.
Food, people have jobs, people are safe.
Yeah.
You know, that's really what we have this, you know, we know this is the aim of using the data, but it's quite a long chain to go from, you know, something up in space measuring a particular part of light down to a decision making or decision that has to be communicated as well to people in a way they can understand. You know, like, you don't, if you're a fisherman, you don't want to have to understand the entire process of a satellite data processing chain in order to make a decision about whether you should go fishing or not. You know, that's the job of us in between, I guess, and people like Kwame to translate that complex information into, you know, something that is meaningful for a complex decision-making process as well.
Yeah. Excellent. So let's turn now and talk to Kwame. So Dr. Kwame Adekunle from the University of Ghana, welcome.
Hi, guys. How are you guys doing?
Very well.
Good, thank you.
Now, I guess we haven't seen you for a while. When was the last time any of us were with you?
I guess that would have been maybe 2018.
Yeah, this was for the TEDx talk.
I saw Kwame in Tanzania. So that was that. We've seen each other a little bit more recently on African soil. So that was cool. We got to do some training together. Time has flown. It was November last year.
Last year, yeah.
So we got to work together on some training there.
So, and what was the course in Tanzania?
So, Microsoft had organized an ocean color training, satellite applications for natural resource management, largely for marine resource management. And Haley and I were there as trainers.
Yeah, so we were working with, as Kwame mentioned, Microsoft is one of the one of the GMES and Africa consortia, of which Kwame is a member of another one. And we all like to try and collaborate and share when it comes to things like training, because we all have different areas of expertise. Kwame obviously has a lot of expertise in using remote sensing for fisheries, which is why he's here today. You know, I know a lot about Sentinel-3, given my job. And our colleagues in South Africa work on a whole different range of applications as well. We even had some other colleagues who came in from Belgium who are experts in some of the high-resolution sensors that are under the Copernicus program. We brought all this together to have a nice big training course on how you can use Copernicus data for marine applications. And we had participants from all across the African continent, which is great because they come with a whole bunch of different questions, topics, projects that they want to work on for challenges in their marine environments. So I love these training courses. They're really, really both, well, they're very intense. We spend a lot of time working, even into the evenings, you know, sat in the hotels where we're doing our training course, chatting about things. But I learn a huge amount as well as they do, I hope. So it's always a very productive week of using satellite data for new things.
Now, the training courses, of course, are just a small part of your world, Kwame. In a way, they're the thing on the side. Tell us a bit about the project you're involved in.
So I work on a project that is largely funded by the African Union and the European Union. What we do is we provide support for marine resource management. There are 12 coastal countries involved in that project. And we largely work with fisheries management managers, environmental scientists, school, universities, students, to provide them access to data and technical support in data analysis. Then we also process these data sets to generate products and services that can be very, very useful in day-to-day management of the marine resources within the West African region.
So the people you talk to, what are the kind of problems that they have to which working with you is part of the answer?
So first, for you to be able to use satellite data requires a lot of expertise, a lot of training. So most of the time, you don't find people in various sectors of government involved in environmental, marine, and fisheries resource management with that sort of technical know-how. So that is where we fit in. So we come in to provide that technical support. Then the next level is, how do you get to know their problems? So they come to us saying we have issues relating to illegal fishing. We want to understand the dynamics of the ocean and how it affects fish distribution. We want to look at coastal vegetation mapping. We have there are threats at sea with respect to the effect of ocean waves and all of that on how fishermen operate. So how do we provide? How do you provide us with information that can allow us to be safe at sea, to protect our resources, and to get the best out of all the resources that we have? So that is where we fit in. Then the other bit, which is very, very important, I indicated initially that we have the expertise, but they don't have. So then how do you bring them to your level or a bit close to what you do so that they can take the data sets, images or information and process them to generate some information that that could be useful for them in their day-to-day operations? So that is the way we engage and operate with our beneficiaries down here.
So that's quite interesting, because you could just provide a service. You know, we give you information, we help you solve your problems, but it sounds like as well you're taking it seriously that people should have or could have, if they wish, a better feel for the data. It sort of makes it, in a way, less secret, more open to them. Why does that matter to you?
Yes. So it's always good to not always provide fish for people in quotes or provide money or that sort of thing. You have to provide them with the skill so that they will be able to be on their own. That is our philosophy. So we would want our beneficiaries to have their skills, and that allows us to even do more from our end and for them to also do more. Mm. So at the end of the day, you have a larger group of people who are able to use satellite imageries in managing their resources. That is one of our primary aims, to ensure that we build a large expertise in West Africa to be able to use satellite imageries. Mm.
I find that really interesting, Kwame. I think that very close interaction with the people that you're, you know, not necessarily trying to serve or help. It sounds a bit patronizing just to say it that way, but the people you're working with on a topic, having that close relationship with them is obviously, you know, very beneficial, I think, for them, but hopefully also for you. I mean, this is something I experienced. I don't know if it's the same, and I'd love to hear any examples you have, but when I was working in a similar thing with the aquaculture industry, and, you know, I know what satellite data can do, I know what we can see, but I had no idea really how their businesses functioned. Like, what were the things they were making decisions about? And like, I had a bit of a preconception that maybe if I gave them this information, this is what they would do. And actually, I turned out to be completely wrong on that. What they said is, actually, we could do with this information so that we can make this decision in a different way, or that we could actually use this to kind of motivate change in our policy kind of infrastructure that exists around, you know, how we make decisions about whether we're opened or closed for safety reasons and things like that. So I learned a huge amount back from them. Was that your experience as well? I mean, in terms of working with people who are maybe downstream from you?
A lot more. You know, recently I had some interactions with fishermen. And recently there's been increase in piracy in the Gulf of Guinea region. And fishermen want to know where their fishing vessels are. And at one point, one of them wanted to know where his fishing vessel was and if any other vessel, which could be a rogue vessel, comes close by, how do we help them find that rogue vessel? And I said, fine. Largely, the bad guys will come not telling you that I'm a bad guy, and they will not report their position. But you can use radar imagery to detect them from ship detection. So day in, day out, through our engagement, we tend to point them to how technology is very, very important in this game that we are in. And they seem to love it. And slowly, slowly they are getting the concept. They are ready to build capacity. They are ready to come to you with their problems, and then you also come in providing all the technical help that you can give them. So it's been awesome working with these guys.
So if you take the pirate fishing example, you mentioned there the radar data. So that's satellite radar data?
Yes, satellite radar imagery. Yes.
So what are you actually looking at? When you look at a satellite radar image, what can you see for a ship?
For a ship, it's just a high bright pixel, right? The ship reflects a lot of signals from satellite, from the radar sensor. So you see a high bright pixel in the image. Then because the ocean is barely not it's a bit rough and doesn't reflect a lot of signals back to the sensor, the ocean looks darker. So it's easy to discriminate between what is a ship and what isn't a ship, right?
And how do you then tell who's so you've got what's a ship and what's not a ship? And how can you tell who's legal and who's not?
Good question. So the vessel that is legal, the good guy, would always be reporting its position. Mm-hmm. Now, you can always get that position from an AIS data, automatic identification system. It's a vessel traffic information that allows you to know the position of the vessel, its name, its call sign, and so forth. But when you superimpose that sort of data with satellite radar imageries, you will be able to know its position in the imagery and who it is from AIS. So that when you see a rogue vessel, obviously it wouldn't be telling you, or you wouldn't have any information from AIS. Then that it allows you to clearly pinpoint who is the right guy to work with and the bad guy to go after.
Who goes after them? Who actually follows up that rogue vessel?
Yes, largely, for instance, in Ghana, we have our Navy and our Air Force. In some countries in the region, they don't have naval force. They have coast guards, so they go after them. More often these rogue guys are armed, so you don't expect a normal or a fishing vessel, a commercial fishing vessel to go after them. It should be one of the armed forces. Yes, a section of the armed forces.
Okay, so it's quite a serious encounter.
Very, very.
That then follows up.
It's led to deaths and you know. Of ransom and all of that. So it's important and it's exciting that we can use radar and satellite imageries, AIS data in detecting bad guys.
And what is the cost to the regional fishing industry of the rogue fishing, of the pirate fishing?
Millions of dollars. I mean in most cases when any of the men on the boats are captured, they would have to pay thousands of dollars, $1 million as ransom fees. And it's not even in money terms. I mean, lives are at stake, and that makes it very, very critical thing that we need to take care of.
And I guess so, like you say, it's the human, the life as impact. It's also the economic impact, but I also imagine it has an impact on the ability of the countries in the Gulf of Guinea to actually manage their fish stocks properly.
Yes. Because if that is not done, I mean, when these rogue guys come in, sometimes it's not just the pirate who come attacking fishermen. There are other people who do not have the legal right to fish in your territorial waters. And you also want to warn them off because they take what does not belong to them. Or in other words, they take what belongs to you and that you can get your fish, you can sell to make money. And it tends to affect the economy of these developing countries.
Now, the radar data you're using, this is the Copernicus Sentinel-1 data, I assume. How do you actually get hold of it? How does it get to you?
So there are different sources, but one of them is to use the Open Hub portal. Yep. Yeah, you go there. I love that portal because apart from just using the user interactive phase, there is also a freely available Python tool that can allow you to automate your downloads. So you automatically download your data. Then you could use Snap, which is a software made available from ESA to process your data. You could automate these with graph tools that could allow you to do your detections, then generate your shape files as positions of vessels detected. And then you combine that with your AI data to to find who is the rogue vessel and that sort of thing. Yeah.
And have you got that whole processing chain automated? So the data basically it just arrives for you.
It can be automated and apart from just you can That's also cool. use other open source programming language to do this. Yes.
Yeah, I think that's one of the good. So Haley and I get a bit excited about. Although it's in a way, it's not an exciting part of the Copernicus program. The fact that the data is open, the fact that there are open source bits of software, the fact that you've got these bits of Python all over the place, which is a scripting language that helps people get hold of data, the fact that you've got this Snap toolbox, it just fills in so many of the gaps that go between the satellite sensing the data and you being able to use it, which is just fantastic.
Yes. The other thing that I think it's important that I make mention of is the fact that there's a huge user support group out there who you could mm-hmm. always rely on. So you don't really need Kwame to be with you to learn these things. You could just Google your problem and you could see a post by maybe Mark or Haley about how you have to process these images. And it's so cool, yeah.
And that actually works both ways. I know both of us, so you visited us in Germany, which is fantastic because, A, we were able to help you as a user, brilliant thing, but also by hearing more of the challenges and the problems that real users of the data have, it actually helps us to improve on our side in terms of being the data service. I can see Haley nodding.
Yeah.
No, this is a really, really important thing. I like getting feedback from users is super, super valuable because A, it tells us we're doing the right thing. And that's, you know, important. We're investing a lot of money in this, us being, you know, the taxpayers and all this sort of thing. So we want to make sure we're doing something that's worthwhile. But we also need to know how to improve. And I think this, you know, you can see the influence that users, you know, like Kwame and his colleagues and other people around the world have had on how we formulate things like our data access. And that, I mean, Kwame, maybe you can talk more about this because I know you're a user. For example, you use our UMetcast system. So to actually receive Sentinel-3 data, not over the internet. And, you know, this system's also used by the Met agencies and things like that. But, you know, those sorts of services and, you know, we have some online stuff, we have some stuff that doesn't depend on the internet, we have more new systems. We mentioned earlier when Mark and I were talking before about hosted processing. You know, we're constantly trying to design these ways that help users get to the data in the way they need to as well. And we couldn't do that without that feedback.
I mean, the user engagement bit is very important in this loop. I mean, knowing what their challenges are and getting fixes for them is very, very important. I mean, and that is another way we approach the people we work out here. We work with over here. We constantly have to know what their needs are. Then we design an approach that fits it. So, for instance, we use some of the CMEMS pronouns to forecast ocean conditions. When we started that service, the idea is we could send the information build an app to run an application on an Android phone to communicate it. But we realized that most of the fishermen that we work with do not have an Android or iOS phones. So how do you send them normal SMS messages? So we set up a system that allows them to receive these very simple text as numbers, where when you have one, it's safe to go to sea. When you have three, the ocean is rough, so don't go, right? Then we started providing that service. Then we realized that it wasn't getting to most of them because sometimes some of them may not also have phones. So the way to get around it was to use flags. So we just find one, the chief fisherman, he receives the message, he goes to him, he takes the corresponding flag, he drops it by the beach and everyone sees it. Yeah, and it's been very, very helpful.
It's amazing that, like how you go, because I mean, it sounds like such a simple thing in concept, doesn't it? A couple of numbers and a text message or a flag on a beach, right? That sounds quite simple and low tech. But when you think about all the information that's had to go into making sure that decision is correct, I mean, it's mind-blowing. And it's such a long chain of skills that need to be in place to get there. You know, everybody from the operators all the way down to the scientists and into the management. And like you say, you need to know, the fishermen need to be engaged with this too. And I always think it's just astounding how that process manages to happen. Makes me really happy to see it.
One very important thing about developing this service is again, the user engagement. So what we found out was that, you need to explain to them what the numbers actually mean and the implications. So we always have to go out there, spend a day or two with them, explain the process, not into details anyway, but to let them know the idea that goes behind the development of the service. Mm. And
they've got to trust it, I guess, right? They need to trust it and you.
Yes. Yeah. So and it's been awesome working with them, and we are constantly learning from them and developing ways to help them out at sea.
There's quite a move in a lot of European projects at the moment around the theme of what's called co-creation. So instead of having experts who say, right, this is how this warning system should work, now we will tell people how the warning system works. It's a little bit more like how you've described it, where, well, we've got an idea, but let's talk with the fishing communities and maybe, okay, this is what a one means. And then maybe they say, well, actually, it should probably mean this, something slightly different, and you change your definition slightly. So that it's much more sensitive to what they need. And the sort of the idea of it's a co-created thing that people do. So with the fishing communities, what kind of information do they get from you about fishing areas, where they can potentially fish?
Yeah, it's a very good question. Back in our region, you know, we as fishers are overfished, right? So it's important we protect the resources. When we again started this project, our idea is, how do we ensure that the fisherman goes to sea and he's catching enough to feed himself and to maybe sell to make some money? We realize, yes, it's good to do that. But when you have a situation where you don't have enough in the ocean, you need to protect it. You need to safeguard that resource. So what we decided to do is, fine, we'll still go out there to generate products that can allow you to find the major fishing spots, but then don't give that to the fisherman, because if you are not careful, he's going to take everything out of the ocean and there will be nothing. So you rather make this information available to the Coast Guards, the Navy, because they have the mandate to periodically go out to sea to ensure that fishermen engage in what we call legal fishing, using the right mesh size, not engaging in transshipment, not using light at sea, not using chemicals and explosives, that sort of thing. So when they have these sort of maps, and you know it's a vast ocean, so you don't want already under-resourced naval forces combing the vast ocean looking for bad people. Let them do targeted monitoring. And the PFZ maps, which is the potential fishing zone maps, that tells you the major fishing grounds, can easily tell them that it is like the conditions here are right for fishes to aggregate. So if you want to go monitor and do your surveillance, this is where you need to go. Hang around this area. Spend some time here, because you think the fishermen or the fishing vessels will move in here to fish. But let me also take you back a bit how that service is developed.
Yeah.
So fishermen actually, they actually go out to sea to fish based on knowing the environment. And they know a bit more sometimes than even the scientists, because they spend a lot of time at sea and they know
how they've got some experience.
Yes. So we develop simple models that allows us to predict. And how do we do this? Ideally, to develop these models, you need them to provide you catch information that I went to this position, latitude A, longitude B, and I caught kill amount of fish. But we realized we were unable to have that sort of information from them because they were not reporting properly. But anytime they go out to sea, they turn on their tracking devices, their AIS transponders, so which allows us to see how they behave at sea. So when we take that information and we analyze their speeds, their course of ground information and so forth, we are able to generate the fishing spots. Then we overlay this on either model products from Mercator or Sentinel Ocean Color Data, SST data. Then we extract that conditions and find areas that are associated with certain levels of ocean parameters. Based on that, we are able to easily predict and combine these various parameters and processes to say that these areas are conducive for fishes to aggregate.
So this is looking at chlorophyll and plankton and the temperature and the circulation,
and so forth. And then we're able to generate these probability maps that allows you to say there's a good condition that there's a good chance that when you go out here, you would find fish.
So are you actually, you're providing that information to the surveillance authorities. Are you providing, and you're providing a limited amount of that information to the actual fishing communities themselves or not?
No.
Interesting.
We are not doing that now. We will only do, you see, and this is how we also operate. The project that we run has a regional steering body.
Yeah.
Right. So certain decisions that we take needs to be sanctioned, and we get our powers from the countries. So the fisheries directors from the various countries have agreed that no, don't send this out to the fishermen. It should stay with the monitoring agencies and surveillance units. So that is our reason for not making that available to fishermen.
So this is because your project is operating across a whole group of countries regionally. You are not given the mandate to interfere in each country. You're just told provide regional information. And the only advice you're giving to the fishermen directly is about the safety, the flags that you mentioned earlier. Ah, that's very cool. And so it's up to the region then to come up with the policy of this is how we're going to manage our fish stocks.
I find this really interesting, this interface, because one of the things I really like, and I'm sure Kwame probably feels similar, Mark I know certainly does, one thing that I like about remote sensing and earth observation is that we have this, you know, it has this potential to really impact lives, to make money, to save money, you know, to help manage the environment. You know, it's very applied as a science, even though we do a lot of, you know, quite hardcore science programming using numbers, etc. It has this really direct application. But that means that we do also end up working in spaces that, as maybe traditionally trained scientists, we're not used to working in. You know, I don't have much background in policy making or politics, and a lot of these issues are really strongly political issues. So we can provide some information, but we can't necessarily always say exactly what should be done with that information. There's a lot more people who need to figure that out. And I think that goes across, you know, remote sensing kind of domains. It's a very complex space to work in, but it can be very, very powerful. So it's really interesting to hear you speak about that, Kwame.
And so, and we should maybe say more. So the ECOWAS is the steering group for your particular project, but it's part of a wider network. Obviously, we've worked on in the past the thing GMES in Africa. Do you want to explain what GMES in Africa is?
Oh, so GMES in Africa is more or less was born out of the Copernicus program that you have in Europe. It's the African version where we get funding, technical support, access to data from Europe, and a lot of technical guidance from African Union to help ensure that we effectively manage our natural resources. So there are about 8 or 9 services on looking at land, climate, weather, marine being implemented at different parts of Africa, and we are one of that unit, but we focus on marine services.
So yeah. I mean, it's a huge way to build the partnerships between, because of course Africa's huge, between different parts of Africa, to exchange knowledge, to exchange information, to exchange data services, but also, and from our side in Europe, it's a really great way to hear from a significant user community about what is needed in terms of future data, in terms of data access, in terms of data dissemination. So it's quite a nice partnership way of working, which is pretty cool.
I think we learn a lot too from those partnerships, really. I mean, some of the examples that are coming out, like what Kwame's talking about, there are really, these are cutting edge examples of Earth observation being implemented in direct application. And that's something I think a scientist anywhere in the world can learn from. So it's, you know, it's been really amazing to see this GMES grow over the last few years, especially as more and more of the consortia are actually putting their services into practice. And there's some incredible examples and stories. I mean, as we've just heard from Kwame, I'm sure you'll agree.
And there's quite a few people I follow on Twitter, actually, who are kind of graduates of the last course. And occasionally you see them posting one or two examples of their work. And that's quite sweet to see when you see people in, say, Tanzania or something. This is the other side of the continent who are posting examples of some of the work they're doing that they've learned from what your project has done. That's pretty cool. So just as we come in to wrap up a little bit, what are some of the things or some of the challenges you're facing just now, Kwame? And what does the next few years hold for you?
So with respect to this project and how we are using satellites, one of the challenges is the language barrier. It's not so critical. I mean, I work with people with Portuguese who speak Portuguese, French, and so forth. So engaging them is a bit difficult. But on the technical side, I guess what we need to do is find ways to resource the next generation in data analysis.
Mm-hmm.
The ability to automate things, because you see, there's so much out there to do, and it's a bit difficult when you don't have the capacity in terms of numbers, human capacity mm-hmm. in terms of numbers, to be able to do all of that. But when you have very good programming skills, you're very good in the analysis of data and all of that, it becomes a bit easy to be able to do the things you want to do, to develop services, implement them quickly. Then it goes out there to the people who you want to reach. Then mm-hmm. the other bit is, you know, we are scientists. And so it becomes a bit difficult for us to easily communicate to the layman, right? So sometimes when we go out there and you want to explain to a layman what you mean by upwelling and all of that. So we must, through these projects, find ways to bring social scientists and mm-hmm. people with communication backgrounds to help support what we do, to help further break these sort of ideas and techniques up down, so that everyone can really take it up and get some information and knowledge from that.
That's pretty cool. The first one for me is a little bit about it's almost a democratizing aspect. The more that people can code for themselves and access the data for themselves, the more they can then decide what this means.
And Mark, then they can do more. They would have different challenges and problems to resolve, and then they come up with new ideas, techniques to get these things done. And that is how we learn, and that's how we build knowledge.
I can see the same challenge. I'm quite optimistic. I think the other thing that I'm really optimistic about in the courses I've seen, we see both men and women coming through, whereas maybe 15 years ago it was all men, and now we're seeing a much broader range of people. People with different backgrounds, but particularly the gender balance. I'm really pleased with that and quite excited to see some of the folk who are coming through. Kwame, if people want to know more about your project on the internet, where can they go to find out more?
Oh, so it's www.gmes is spelled gmes.ug.edu/edu.gh. So let me repeat it again. It's gms.ug.edu.gh. And you can find
that's
more
University
about
of Ghana. Ghana. In,
yes, edu UG. And so forth. Yeah.
Awesome. And people can also have a look at your TEDx talk that you gave a couple of years ago, where you talked about the potential fishing zones and a little bit of actually your story, your personal story, as well as the illegal fishing. Kwame, it's a huge, huge joy to talk to you again. I'm hoping that we'll actually get to see you at some point soon, hopefully at a user forum, if and when that can actually take place.
Sure.
Otherwise, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me, and it was nice meeting you guys again. All the best, guys.
Thanks, take care. Kwame.
Thank you. So, yeah, Hayley, I mean, for me, it's a little bit of a joy to speak to Kwame again. We worked together a few years ago on the TEDx talk and really trying to get people to understand why these data are important. And to hear him again, I just love it. I'm not too sure that's a reflection, but it's just an appreciation of his work.
Yeah, I love chatting to Kwame. I mean, Kwame and I were very similar in age. We come from very similar backgrounds. In fact, we even share an academic supervisor back when we were studying for our masters and PhDs. So, you know, we've kind of grown up together a bit through science, and it's always great for me to sort of touch base with him and see what he's doing, where he's working now, and, you know, vice versa. And I really can't emphasize enough how much I truly admire the work they've been doing in Ghana. It is genuinely world-leading stuff. And that is, it's just fantastic to see. And I learn so much every time I speak to them. And, you know, beyond Kwame, the entire team at the University of Ghana, we've worked with them on several training courses as well. And it's always been an absolute pleasure. Mm. So it's great to have him on the podcast. And I think that's the stories about the fishing, because fishing is this thing, as I said before, that is super connecting between us as land-dwelling human society and the oceans. Yeah. You know, fishing really gets into the core of what we understand about the sea and how we use it. So to see such an elegant end-to-end story of use of satellite data down to making this resource, you know, work for people is just fantastic. So I'm so glad we're able to get him on the show.
I think it's great. And actually, one thing that really struck me and I was surprised by was who gets the information about the potential fishing zones. And of course, it's going to the regional people that have to do the actual management, and the actual fishing communities are getting the information about safety. And that difference quite surprised me, but I guess it does make sense just in terms of who yeah. has which problem.
Yeah, and whose responsibility things are and how you can make decisions about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen the fisheries. Fisheries is a big issue. I mean, lots of ocean scientists work on fisheries, but it's also known as a very, very sensitive issue. I mean, rightly so. There are lives and livelihoods at stake when it comes to saying you can or can't fish in a certain place. You know, both in the short term and in the long term, you know, when we're talking about sustainability. So it's a very, very sensitive issue to deal with. And the management of it varies hugely around the world. Mm-hmm. You know, some places are using more and more of this sort of data, others rely on different types of data, you know, and they have different social, cultural, historical reasons for fishing the way they do and where they do. But it's great to see that this modern technology is able to do something towards helping people manage that, however politically they may decide to do it. I've seen different examples all around the world, and they're always really, really interesting, and they play out in different ways and sometimes achieve similar ends, you know, of having sustainable fishing stocks using very different management practices. So yeah, it's very, very interesting as a field.
Awesome. It's a joy as well to talk to you again. Our next episode, we still aren't sure exactly who the guest is going to be.
I've got a couple of ideas at my seat. I've got a couple of people I want to try and lure onto the podcast. So maybe something about bioluminescence, maybe something about artificial light. So bioluminescence, so natural light, artificial light. Maybe we've got some other people who we want to talk to about that.
Awesome. And if people listening have ideas, they're very welcome. If you've got a question or a curiosity, do send it in and we'll see what we can do. Hayley, do take care. It's a pleasure to talk to you. And we'll see each other again soon.